Coming up on this episode of The Doctor's Pharmacy.
I think a lot of people suffer from anxiety and depression along with their, quote, autoimmune diseases. And people tell them, well, you're anxious because you have fibromyalgia or because you have RA. No, you're not anxious because you have those things necessarily. I mean, yes, they suck. It's depressing, but there's a brain component here. There's a neurologic component.
Hey, everyone. It's Dr. Mark. Most people don't realize that our exposure to light has a huge impact on our health. And that's because we're wired to respond to the changing position of the sun, which regulates our body's circadian rhythm and either helps us to feel energized and awake or lets us know it's time for bed. But our modern always-on culture means we're now surrounded by conventional LEDs and fluorescent bulbs and digital devices with bright lit screens that emit junk light around the clock. My friend Dave Asprey actually coined that phrase, junk light, to describe the excess of blue light as well as green and violet light that disrupt our circadian rhythms. Junk light reduces our ability to produce melatonin, which is a key hormone for regulating our internal clock, sleeping well, and even aging well. It's important to realize we actually need to be exposed to certain amounts of blue light in the daytime, otherwise we may feel too sleepy or tired. It's the excess of all that blue light along with other types that leads to a long list of potential problems. So how can we get just the right amount of light throughout the day? Well, going outside is, of course, key, but we almost all work on computers these days and have our phones with us 24/7. And that's why I was really excited to learn about the True Dark Daylight glasses. True Dark Daylights are meant to be worn during the day. They come with either clear lenses that block 40% of blue light or yellow lenses that block 75% of blue light. Some of these daylights also act as transition sunglasses that, in addition to blocking toxic blue light indoors, also have photochromic lenses that are darker when exposed to natural sunlight outdoors and block 99% of UVA, UVB rays, so they double as sunglasses. With True Dark Daylights, you help prevent eye strain and headaches from overexposure to junk light, but you stay awake and alert. True Dark also has a Twilight's Connection for nighttime to help you get deeper sleep. These glasses use red lenses to block the full junk light spectrum, including blue, green, and violet light. Right now, you can get 15% off at truedark.com/Hyman with the code DrHyman15. That's truedark.com/Hyman with the code DrHyman15. I love finding new products that are good for me and the planet, especially things I use every day. Now, something most people don't think about when they think about health is the quality of their mattress, because this is actually one area of your home that has a huge potential to increase or decrease your toxic burden. Most traditional mattresses contain toxins that off-gas and impact air quality over time. These can be in the form of VOCs or volatile organic compounds from polyurethane or other chemicals from things like flame retardants. Ugh. I don't know about you, but I definitely don't want to be sleeping on something with 8 hours a night that leaches toxins into the air that I'm breathing. And that's why I was really excited to try my Essentia mattress. Essentia makes mattresses that go above and beyond the criteria to being non-toxic using natural Hevea latex. They created the Beyond Organic label because being organic is just the starting point for Essentia. Their natural and organic materials reduce VOC exposure, and all essential products are produced in their certified global organic latex and global organic textile standards factory. And Essentia has their own higher standards, which focuses on sleep performance. Love that. But they're not just clean mattresses. They're also extremely comfortable. Very comfortable. Essentia mattresses eliminate negative space and help properly align your posture with their whole body recovery system that uses a high-density natural memory foam that reacts quickly to your natural movements at night. That means less sleep interruptions and more consistent REM sleep cycles. I wake up feeling so rested and refreshed after sleeping on my Essentia, and I love knowing my home is less toxic. Right now, Essentia is offering all Doctor's Pharmacy free Bodyguard mattress covers with your mattress purchase. And be sure to check out additional savings, including 25% off your entire order, $200 off all hybrid mattresses, and more during Essentia's Memorial Day sale, which starts on May 21st. Just go to learn.myessentia.com/drmarkhyman, that's Dr. Mark Hyman, to take advantage of these great offers. Again, that's learn.myessentia.com/drmarkhyman. I know you're going to love sleeping on your Essentia mattress and linens as much as I do. Now let's get back to this week's episode of The Doctor's Pharmacy. Welcome to The Doctor's Pharmacy. I'm Dr. Mark Hyman, and that's Pharmacy with an F, F-A-R-M-A-C-Y, a place for conversations that matter. If you've ever been chronically sick and struggled to find the answers, you should listen up, because this conversation is going to matter to you, because it's about something that's pretty prevalent and mostly ignored or overlooked by traditional medicine, which are chronic infections and autoimmune disease. And we're going to get deep into this with our guest today, which is Dr. Stephen Phillips and Dana Parrish. Dr. Phillips is a well-known physician. He's a renowned Yale-trained doctor, international lecturer, and a media go-to expert. He's published many papers in the medical literature and treated over 20,000 patients with complex chronic illnesses from nearly 20 countries. He's experienced firsthand the nightmare of an undiagnosed serious infection, nearly dying from his own mystery illness and having to save his own life when 25 doctors could not. And that sounds exactly like me, Stephen. So I've been there. I get it. And Dana, thank you for joining us today. Dana Parrish has someone who's recovered from a Lyme disease-induced heart failure, which is not actually uncommon, and was improperly diagnosed by some of the top doctors in the country, and Dr. Phillips saved her life. She's a Sony chart-topping Sony ATV singer-songwriter who's written songs for people like Celine Dion and others. She's become a major voice in the world of chronic illness, and her popular column on Huffington Post has been read by more than 1 million people globally. Welcome, Stephen and Dana.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's great to see
you.
Okay, let's get into it. So we are living in a planet that's very polluted. The air is polluted. There's toxins everywhere. We're eating processed food and refined foods. We're taking all kinds of medications and antibiotics that affect the microbiome. Some of us are born by C-sections. And all these have screwed up our immune systems. And we're seeing part of the immune dysfunction in COVID. But it's much deeper than that. It existed way before COVID, which is these chronic low-level diseases that make people just not be able to live their full lives. And I know I felt that. Clearly, both of you have been through that. And what we're seeing is this increasing autoimmune pandemic. You know, there's 80 million people who have some type of autoimmune disease. That's almost two or three times as much people who have diabetes or heart disease, which is kind of staggering. But they're all different ones, like MS or rheumatoid arthritis or Hashimoto's. So you have different specialties talking about them. When you look at autoimmune disease as a whole, it's a big deal. And the question is, why are we seeing such a rampant increase in autoimmune disease? Is it toxins? Is it food? Is it infections? Is it something else? And you both have written a book together called Chronic, which starts with the premise that a lot of autoimmune diseases are exploding, often because of underlying chronic infections. So Dr. Phillips, tell us how you kind of figured this out. How did you come up with this hypothesis? And what made you interested in this idea of chronic infections and autoimmune disease? Because even though we know in medical school, we learned a few autoimmune diseases may be related to infections, it wasn't really a predominant theme.
Right. So thank you. So I've been in practice since 96, and I started treating lots of Lyme patients. And at that point, Lyme was the infection that got all the attention. And for a lot of us, it's the one that any of us has heard about. We haven't heard about these many other chronic infections. But people come in with diagnoses of, is it Lyme? Is it MS? Is it Lyme? Is it fibromyalgia? Is it Lyme? Is it inflammatory arthritis? And I would treat them for the underlying infections that I found. And what was diagnosed as a possible autoimmune illness just kind of evaporated. And I would see it time and time again. And it wasn't all Lyme. I was looking for other chronic infections and finding them. And then I came upon the realization about the fact that there's this precipitous rise in chronic and autoimmune illness around the world. And it's been like this slowly exploding pandemic, rather than as opposed to COVID, which has just taken the world by storm. This has kind of just crept up on us over the last 30 years, and it's shockingly common. And because it is siloed, because it's between different medical specialties, no one's really putting the pieces together about why is this happening? Because the infections have been here forever. And like you mentioned, we're living in an increasingly toxic environment. I think that a lot of us are less able to deal with infections that are common in the population.
So what happened to you? I mean, tell us about your journey with chronic infection.
A lot. Yeah, I went through the mill. So I first got Lyme, just regular garden variety Lyme, like so many people do that live in Connecticut. Mm. And it was a moderate case. It wasn't dramatic. It didn't disable me. But I realized by going to many infectious disease doctors and ultimately ending up in the office of doctors like myself, Lyme doctors, that there's real discordance among the medical community and how they approach chronic illness. And no one seemed to know what was going on. I gradually got better and I had many relapses, and it wasn't a 3-week course of doxycycline that got me better. And then I was really fine. I still had occasional relapses, but I was a healthy guy. I could run like 5 miles. I could play tennis all day and work 6 days a week, which I did for many, many years. Then in 2010, while I was sleeping, I got spider bites and I didn't think anything of it. And with those spider bites, a couple months later, my body exploded with arthritis all over, rapidly progressive to literally every joint in my body, especially my spine. And wow. I went to 25 doctors that couldn't help me. I went to other doctors like myself who thought it was maybe prior Lyme, but I was the only one that's saying it wasn't. And none of the antibiotics that helped me previously helped me for this case. And I went to rheumatologists who diagnosed me with rheumatoid arthritis and spondylitis, which is arthritis of the spine. And it progressed very rapidly within 6 months, despite treatment with different medications, including many antibiotics. I couldn't walk. And they ended up not walking for almost 2 years. I had to give up my practice for 2.5 years. I was completely bedbound for about a year and a half. And I almost died on many occasions. I lost 50 pounds. I couldn't turn over in bed. I couldn't sit up on my own. I needed 24-hour home care. I got severely anemic. And I had fevers, 102 every night. It was a dire situation. And I figured it out in the last minute and put it all together. And I saved my own life. And it's not just like saved my life. I'm back to a full life. And I'm back in practice since 2013. You know, I lecture all over the place before COVID, traveling around the world and, you know, not limited in any way. And when I went back to my three top rheumatologists when I recovered and I told them, you know, this is how I got better. Will it change how you practice? They're like, no, I'm glad you got better, but we're not gonna change.
Tell us more what actually got you better, what you did to recover and what was the root of cause. Because functional medicine is really about looking at the root causes of disease. And this is really what you're doing. You're looking at not just the label that people get like rheumatoid arthritis, but what's underneath it and how do we fix that?
I went to regular doctors and I went to functional medicine doctors as well. Like I said, I went to every specialist I can find. And I did the elimination diets. I didn't find any heavy metals or anything like this. She wasn't able to help me, to be perfectly honest. And I took lots of antibiotics that flared me up, but didn't get me better. And really, it came down to that my infection was Bartonella, which is a antibiotic refractory infection. And it needed really just specific antibiotics. And that's what got me better. I took lots and lots of herbs that didn't help. And at first, I wasn't a believer that herbals were helpful. And then I took my first herb to rock my world. And it caused this huge Herxheimer and massive improvement. And that was liposomal artemisinin. And I was like, oh, so that's how an herb's supposed to work. And then I ended up getting tremendous benefit from liposomal oil of oregano and my second herbal and then monolaurin. So there were a few supplements and herbals that were found really, really beneficial. But primarily for me, it was antibiotics. It was things like doxycycline and rifampin and Bactrim.
So those antibiotics, you know, are strong antibiotics. But Bartonella is really one of those tough infections. It's one of those tough infections that's often hard to find and hard to treat. And so, you know, people suffer for years from leading things like this. And I've seen people literally for decades have problems and then you treat them and they get better. It's pretty miraculous.
No, I went back to rheumatologists and they looked like I was a Martian. I mean, one was delighted that I got better. One treated me like it can't be, like in disbelief. And I did a little dance in front of him to try and convince him. I mean, because he saw me not walking and I was like, look, I'm dancing. I'm not a good dancer, but... And then one was just looking like I was a one-off, like I'm a one in a million case. And she's like, look, one in a million things happen. I'm like, I'm not one in a million. I mean, my mommy told me I'm special when I'm a kid, but I don't think I'm one in a million. And I think there are other people that have very similar things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny. I remember giving a talk at Harvard and I was presenting about a case of autism that had dramatically turned around. And one of the pediatricians there was like, well, you know, this might just be a case of spontaneous remission. And then one of the other doctors, well, Dr. Hyman said like 5 cases of spontaneous remission in his practice this year so far. If you understand what the roots are. And you also talk about in the book your dad who had pretty bad heart failure and needed a heart transplant.
No, he did not need a heart transplant. That they wanted to give him a heart
transplant. He was going to need one, right?
Right.
So what was sort of the discovery there. Tell us about your dad.
That's what galvanized my interest in doing what I do. It wasn't my own case. Like I said, my case of Lyme was pretty moderate and I wasn't planning on doing this as a career. And but when I started learning about this, my father had a case of what they thought was a viral meningitis in 1975. And then shortly after that became a non-specific heart palpitations and it got just worse and worse. Then he turned into atrial fibrillation, a specific type of arrhythmia. And then he went into heart failure. And we took him to all the best doctors in New York City, at all the top teaching hospitals. And we don't skimp. We went to the best. And they all couldn't save him. And he got worse and worse. He had ejection fraction between 10 and 20. They said that his lifespan would be measured in months without a heart transplant. And I was just finishing up my residency at Yale. I was doing Lyme research. I'd already had some experience with Lyme personally. And I was like, looked it up and I was like, holy crap, Lyme can do this. So I went to the cardiologist. I said, you know, Lyme can do this condition, dilated cardiomyopathy. Can we evaluate him? And he rolled his eyes and discounted the whole thing. And, you know, they published a study in 2015 where they looked at people with his type of condition, his type of heart failure, went in and did heart muscle biopsies on all of them and found that 20% had Lyme DNA and made a point in the study to say that almost 2/3 of them had negative Lyme tests. So if you don't really have a big suspicion about what these infections can do, you're going to miss it. And I've treated about 50 cases.
See, what you just said was really important. I want to emphasize it. You say that, you know, 20% of the biopsies in the heart muscle were positive, but 2/3 of the people who had the positive test had a negative blood test. So in other words, you can get a blood test, it can look fine. Yep. Your doctor says your labs are fine, you don't have Lyme, but actually if you look deeper, you can actually find it because it may not always show up in the regular lab test. That's an important point.
Yeah, but you have to ask yourself, who goes and gets a heart biopsy to diagnose Lyme? Like, it's the silliest thing. Like, you know, the tests are antiquated. They're like 40 years old. I always say I won't get on a 40-year-old airplane. I'm not going to trust my health to outdated technology with blood testing. But long story short, he wouldn't evaluate him because the guy, my dad never had arthritis and he didn't have a Bell's palsy. He said, you're a doctor now, do it. I was just, you know, fresh out of school, basically. And I basically treated him, and his heart function completely normalized. He's 88 years old now. He never needed a heart transplant. He's not in heart failure at all. And that's the story.
That's incredible. So what you're saying is essentially you cured an incurable condition, according to traditional medicine, with treatment of his Lyme disease, which was causing his heart failure. And I think this is sort of important to underscore, because so much of what we see in my world, in your world, people who are suffering from chronic illnesses who just don't get better, bounce from doctor to doctor, and are often misdiagnosed because doctors often don't have a framework for looking at root causes. And, you know, functional medicine is this framework for looking, whether it's heavy metals, which I've had, or Lyme disease, which I've had, or Babesia, which I've had, or mercury, which I've had, or mold, which I've had. You know, these are things which are typically ignored by traditional doctors. Even diet, for God's sake, which is more obvious, is often also ignored as a root cause of so many chronic illnesses. And I think what you're talking about is that there is hope for people who suffer and who struggled if they can figure out how to get to the right person, which is not always easy, but to even advocate for yourself and say, look, I've got this problem, but I'm not giving up and I'm going to go kind of dig until I find what's going on. And yeah, it could be a number of different things from a perspective of causes that can cause the same syndrome. So you can have rheumatoid arthritis, but it could be heavy metals, it could be gluten, it could be Lyme, it could be Bartonella, it could be all kinds of things. But we basically just lump everybody into the same category. Oh, you've got rheumatoid arthritis, or you've got this or that disease. And we go, we know what to do. We give you the drug for that disease, but it doesn't really speak to the cause. And that's really what you guys have been talking about. It's so refreshing to hear you talking about that. So Dana, I want to sort of jump to you for a minute. You got sick, and you also developed a Lyme-induced heart failure, and you're a pretty young woman, and you sort of talk about how you got a tick bite and a rash, and everything kind of went downhill from there, and you went to doctor after doctor until you kind of found Dr. Phillips and got treated. So tell us about your story and how you ended up being treated by Dr. Phillips and what happened to you and how you got better.
Sure. So it was the summer of 2014. I was truly at the prime of my life. You know, I just signed a brand new deal with Sony and just wrote their songs for Celine. And I was supposed to be traveling all over the place. And I was incredibly happy. So I say that because when doctors start saying like, it's in your head, or you're making it up, or you want, you know, you just want attention, like those kinds of things are absolutely insane to me, because so many people are like me where they get really derailed at the prime of their lives, and nobody would make this stuff up. It's absolutely devastating. So I got a tick bite. I saw the rash. I got it within 5 days. I caught it because I knew when I got back from New Jersey and got back to Manhattan where I lived, and I saw it. I was lucky that I was in the minority that saw the bite and the rash on my shoulder. Most people never see it, and many strains of Lyme do not produce a rash, and many other tick-borne infections produce no rash. Yeah. So that's an important thing for people to know. So I went right over to urgent care. I knew it was Lyme. They knew it was Lyme. They gave me 3 weeks of doxycycline, an antibiotic, and said, you'll be fine. Go on with your life. They also told me not to Google Lyme and that I would get scared and that I don't want to be a crazy Lyme person. That was a clue that something really weird was going on. I had no idea that this very common, ubiquitous infectious disease that drives a pandemic of illness was a political hotbed. Like, I had no clue. So I do take the doxycycline. I try to move on with my life. And 3 months later, I wake up, all hell broke loose. The first symptom was that my breast was swollen overnight. I had all these fibrocystic changes and extreme pain. Went to the internist. She panicked. She sent me to an oncologist that day at Mount Sinai. He ruled out cancer. He agreed my breast was swollen. He agreed this was weird. Didn't know why. Just knew it wasn't cancer. Sent me on. I went to go on to have fibromyalgia, you know, exercise-induced incredible weakness. There was a little gym in my building. I did my same lame workout that I do all the time. And just one day my arm stopped working in the midst of all of this. Literally couldn't lift a fork, couldn't feed myself, couldn't walk my 29-pound dog. And I went on to have incredible body pain, brain fog, visual disturbances, anxiety, depression, intrusive suicidal ideation, where I literally couldn't stop thinking about jumping out my window, but I didn't want to, but I couldn't stop. It was like a monster took over my brain and my body. I went on to see 3 infectious disease doctors, tons of internal medicine and the oncologist and sports medicine, and nobody had any answers. And I would ask them, especially the ID guys, you know, could this be related to the tick bite? No. Why not? Because you took the 3 weeks of doxy and it's cured 100% of the time in the test tube with doxy. Okay, that's actually totally not true. The other reason that one of them gave me, this is my favorite, this well-known doctor at NYU said to me, because I went to medical school. So I'm like, well, ticks carry other infections too. You know, is there anything else? I was pushing them. At some point I said, do you want to test me for inflammatory markers? Like anything? He goes, oh, that's a pretty good idea. Okay, well, this is my third visit with you. You know, are you kidding me? So I went on to have this horrible experience until December when I went into heart failure. And then everybody like really got serious, really believed me. I mean, I do think some of them thought it was in my head because I had so many weird, disparate, migrating symptoms that doctors are, when they don't understand something, they put you in the psychiatric bucket. You know, that's a theme. I think, of course, you know that very well. So, and when you have these things, you do feel crazy because nobody can give you any help. And also the fact that it's changing all the time and every day, it really feels crazy. So then in December, I went into heart failure. My ejection fraction was 40%. Under 50 is considered heart failure for people who don't know. And yeah. And it was, I mean, I was so healthy before all of this. So then, thank God, I had a friend who knew about Dr. Phillips and seen him testify at some hearing and like knocked it out of the park and said, you know, you got to go see him. He's brilliant. And he's the only person I would see if I was in your position. So I went to him and he saved my life. And, you know, within like 2 months of seeing him, my heart failure totally resolved. And he did talk to the Mount Sinai cardiologist who had been very concerned about it, did take my heart failure seriously, just didn't know the cause. And Steve really educated him about, you know, Lyme carditis. He didn't really even know very deeply about it. He was interested and he was educable. He was the only one, but he was, and I really appreciate that. But I was treated with a rotating course of antibiotics, antimicrobials, I did a Chinese herbal protocol as well called the Zhang protocol. There are plenty of them, of different Chinese medicines you can take. That was the choice I made because I lived in Manhattan and it was in the city and I could see them. And anyway, Dr. Phillips really came in and got me better. It was a miracle.
Yeah. Well, you know, I hear this story so much that people, you know, often suffer and they really struggle with trying to figure out how to get the right treatment. But, you know, I think what you're speaking to is the need to think deeply about rethinking medicine and rethinking how we approach disease based on root causes.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hey everyone, it's Dr. Mark. Being at home so much lately has got me excited to travel again when it's safe, and I'm sure most of you can relate. I've been all over the world, and in most countries I've noticed a similarity in other people's self-care routines that we have not embraced here in the United States, which is that they use bidets. Now, I know it might sound kind of odd, but think about how much cleaner you get with water than with using dry paper. It's actually easier than ever to use a bidet in your own house with the Tushy bidet attachment. I got a Tushy bidet after seeing how popular bidets were in other parts of the world, and I have to say, I love it. I was able to install it myself, and honestly, it makes my bathroom routine feel way more clean and comfortable. The Tushy bidet easily attaches right to your current toilet and hooks up to the fresh water supply behind it. Plus, you know I'm all about decreasing my environmental impact, and a bidet is a great way to do that because you save the trees that are killed for pulp production of toilet paper. And you save money. You'll end up buying 80% less toilet paper since you just need a few squares to pad dry. Using a bidet instead of toilet paper, you can also have some great benefits for your health, like avoiding painful hemorrhoids, yeast infections, and bladder infections, because it's more effective at getting rid of bacteria. For people dealing with other bowel issues that cause irritation, like Crohn's or IBS, or even women who've recently given birth, a bidet can feel really soothing too. Seriously, once you go to Tushy, you will never go back to wiping with dry, scratchy toilet paper again. It's a life-changing experience. Tushy is a really affordable way to upgrade your bathroom, starting at only $99. And if you're on the fence right now, it's a perfect time to give it a shot since they're offering my audience an extra 10% off. Just go to hellotushy.com/Hyman to get 10% off your order. And I think you'll be as pleasantly surprised as I was what a nice upgrade using a bidet can be. Now let's get back to this week's episode of The Doctor's Pharmacy.
One of the things I want to sort of jump into with both of you, and you talk a lot about these kinds of things in your book, Chronic, which is great. It's called The Hidden Cause of Autoimmune Pandemic and How to Get Healthy Again. And it's available now on Amazon everywhere. And people should get a copy. If you've been struggling, this is going to help you understand what's going on and maybe guide you to the right resources. What really is going on is that, you know, there's these chronic latent infections with clearly the tick infections, which is Lyme, Bartonella, Babesia, Ehrlichia, and there are lots of varieties of each one of these. So they're often hard to detect. The testing is sort of a little bit outdated, as you mentioned, Stephen. And I just wondered if you could speak a little bit about the testing, and then I want to sort of jump into talking about COVID and latent infections and autoimmune disease, because I think it's a topic that people are talking about a lot, and I think people don't understand what that means in long haul COVID.
So the many infections do have an unfortunate commonality, is that they're fastidious. It's a term that microbiologists use to describe, you know, infections that we can't isolate from animals and people that have the infection. So Lyme is probably the best studied of all of them. If you inject Lyme bacteria into a dog and then let the dog get sick and then take the dog's blood sample a month later and you know the dog has Lyme, you can't find the actual bacteria in the blood. And it's the same for all the animals studied and same for people. And with the animal studies, they can cut them up and find that there's still Lyme bacteria alive after the same treatments that are supposed to cure it in humans. And in humans, they don't cut us up, thankfully. And that's the main difference in terms of the animal data and the human data. But they've isolated this bacteria, even though it's so hard to isolate, they've still isolated it from about 75 patients, human patients, after up to 2 years of antibiotics. So it could be a really, really stubborn bacteria. But believe it or not, it's easier to treat, in my experience, than some of the other infections, particularly Bartonella. Tularemia is really rough sometimes, and so can Coxiella. Q fever is very, very difficult. And then the parasitic infections that people never talk about because we're told to ignore them in med school. But I do a broad range of a panel, a blood test panel for antibodies against, you know, 9 different parasites whenever people come in. And it's shockingly common. And the interaction between parasitic infections and bacterial ones is such that the parasitic infections facilitate and perpetuate the bacterial ones because they're a bit immune suppressive.
And so you're getting also viral infections that underlie some of these chronic things too. And right now we're seeing this viral infection, COVID, and what we're seeing even more scary to me than the actual COVID, because most people recover from that, is the long hauler COVID syndrome, which we've talked about on the podcast before. Essentially, it's a chronic fatigue-like syndrome. And with the first SARS infection, you know, decades ago, about 40% of people who survived, and it was a much more lethal infection, 40% of people who survived got chronic fatigue at 3 years. And we're seeing this now. We're seeing people who have not even been that sick, people who are young and healthy who got it and recovered and just never get better. So can you talk about what this long hauler COVID syndrome is, how it relates to the underlying potential other factors that are going on with people, like chronic infections? What do we know? What do we not know? And what's your experience in treating some of these patients?
So my experience in treating just regular COVID, acute COVID, has been overall very, very good. And patients have responded to things like doxycycline, ivermectin, and a bunch of herbals like vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc, quercetin, and bromelain. However, my experience with long COVID is a little bit different. I only have one true long COVID patient. She's a person who didn't call the office for her acute COVID situation. She called a primary care doctor who said, just take Tylenol. And then 3 months later, she called 11 doctors in desperation. I was doctor number 11. And I actually gave her ivermectin and she turned around in 24 hours. I do have one patient I actually just spoke to today who had a mild case of COVID. And after that, her Bartonella symptoms are very much flared up. And we're trying to figure out, is this still virus persistent in her body? Is that what's driving things? Or is it like the apple cart was just upset immunologically and her prior Bartonella is flared up? It seems to be actually the latter in her, because she's responding to the antimicrobial therapies she did before with Herxheimer reactions, which are these die-off reactions, and all these things that all got worse since her COVID are responding to, you know, the same antibiotics that I would treat somebody with Bartonella. So I'm wondering if some of these long COVID patients that have, people don't understand that, you know, we think about these infections that they always cause illness, but the majority of these chronic infections that we're talking about today don't make people sick. Or if they make them sick, they make them mildly sick and they never really get a diagnosis. What happens when you come with a long, you know, a bad viral insult? So before COVID came along, I would have people who had a really bad flu and then they were never the same. And then they develop a chronic fatigue-like picture. And we do an evaluation for chronic infections, find some, treat some, and get them better. I don't think it's that dissimilar. I think COVID is a terrible, terrible virus, but I think it has the same common features with other viruses that it could just, like I said, be a big shock to the immune system. And it's ridiculously common how many of us are walking around with chronic infections we just don't know about that never get diagnosed.
So how do we then attack this long hauler COVID? Because I think people are curious about, okay, well, I'm not feeling well. I've had COVID. I want to get better. I don't know what to do. And what are the kinds of things you're seeing as one, any diagnostic information you're getting on these people? And two, you know, what are you finding works clinically to treat these people and help them get better?
Well, it's hard to it's hard to find the virus. You know, in the studies, the people that have had persistent active virus, it's been basically GI tract biopsies and biopsies of the olfactory bulb near the brain. So it's not just a, you know, your listeners should know, it's not just a, you know, go for a nasal swab and when it's PCR negative, that rules it out. So the virus can persist in hard to you know, biopsy places. And these tests are not available at like routine drive-through centers. It's really like a research test. So doctors don't have the ability to do that outside of a research setting. In terms of looking for these other infections, any doctor that's educated about these can look for them. You know, I do 99% of my blood tests for patients at chain labs like Quest and LabCorp. And it's a long litany. You know, it's like 17 tubes of blood. But we cast a broad net and we generally find targets that are treatable.
And in terms of the clinical symptoms people are having and the treatments that are working, can you tell us more what you're thinking about how we should be approaching this?
So there's a subset of long COVID patients that are, you know, have some common features. The breadth of symptoms is really, really, it's incredibly broad. Like, and there are some things that I'm hearing about in long COVID patients that I see in my chronic illness patients, and they're very weird symptoms, like a sense of internal vibrations. I don't know if you've had patients that ever complained of that to you, but this is a common, common complaint among my patients. It's something long COVIDs are complaining about, long COVID patients. So as soon as I heard that, I started getting very, very suspicious that, wait a second, is this really flaring up underlying infections that we see? And in my one clear, you know, long COVID patient that I've seen, it's, she responded to ivermectin, like I said, overnight, and she basically had chest pressure and pain with breathing, and that was her persistent manifestation of COVID. It's not something she ever had with her prior illness. She was a patient who was treated, you know, over a year or so before, you know, she'd been fine, you know, since I treated her, got COVID, and had this chest pain. So she developed a new symptom and very quickly responsive to ivermectin. So ivermectin, I don't know if you've talked about ivermectin on your shows before or no.
Yeah.
But ivermectin is an antiparasitic. It's a really safe drug. Yeah. So it's, I've had experience with it way before COVID came around because I used it because I do, like I said, evaluate and treat parasitic infections. And I've also used it as an immune modulator. So ivermectin has this really cool many effects in the body. It gets rid of abnormal inflammation and it gets rid of abnormal immune suppression at the same time. So it has immunologic benefits for people with inflammatory illness, but also in the case of COVID, it has a direct antiviral effect. So so if I have a long COVID patient, I mean, I'm going to offer them something that's going to cover the virus and I'm going to evaluate them for the other chronic infections that COVID could have stirred up. And what we find, we'll offer treatment for those as well. I would take a dual approach.
Yeah. And are people getting better, you think? Because I think a lot of people are worried about the long haul COVID syndrome and people not actually recovering fully from it.
Well, I've been booked out for so long that we haven't even, long COVID patients are calling the office and I'm just gathering data among my patients now who had COVID. Like I said, limited experience in treating long COVID patients. So I'm going to start accepting long COVID patients and evaluating them the way that I said, using this dual approach to cover the possibility of persistent viral, stuff going on and also the possibility of flared up other chronic infections like Lyme and Bartonella and other chronic infections that people may never have heard about. And, I do think that I can help patients, but I don't have a big well, of experience to draw from. I don't know how many long COVID doctors are there, have a big well of experience on what's working, because from what I'm hearing from the long COVID community, because we're partnered with Survivor Corps, which is a large group with long COVID patients. And so far, there's very limited trials of stuff to get these patients better. Like none of the doctors are really taking it by the horns, so to speak, and really helping these patients.
Well, we've got a clinic at Cleveland Clinic called the Recover, RECOV, right? Like for COVID, Recover Clinic. It's a multidisciplinary clinic around how to recover from COVID, from the long hauler syndrome. So I think that there's some interesting things happening around the academic centers. We're looking at all kinds of options. And I do think functional medicine approach is really powerful. And I think for people listening, there's a lot of approaches to chronic infections, antibiotics, herbs, lifestyle, and more. Some of the other things that we've talked about in the show, like ozone and hyperbaric oxygen therapy, hyperthermia, and other approaches can be actually also very effective. And clinically, I find some of those really helpful in getting resetting the immune system and resetting the way in which your body handles infections, even directly killing infections. So I think there's a lot of tools out there and options. We did a podcast from Santa Vive where I went and I personally had Bartonella. I was really persistent. I was having night sweats, still fatigue. I was functioning pretty well, but I still really, struggled. And people who do kind of well, they're walking wounded, are often the ones who have good lifestyles, but they still have this low grade stuff. If you have a crappy lifestyle and you get this, you're in trouble. It's really bad. But yeah. But I got the chance to do hyperthermia, which was an interesting treatment that's not available in the United States. It's in Europe and in Mexico. And I was able to, put my body to 107 degrees. And after that, and getting the antibiotics during that time, during the peak of the fever, allowed my system to start to respond and shift and recover. And I just talked to another patient who had Parkinson's disease, who also had Babesia and Lyme and many other co-infections, and really found the same thing. We treated him with lots of antibiotics and herbs and things over the years, but finally we got him to do treatments of ozone or hyperbaric oxygen and hyperthermia, and he went to Santa Vive, and it was really quite remarkable. So it's not available to everybody. It's expensive, but for people who are really struggling, there is often a way out. So Dana, tell us about your perspective in terms of interacting with your own, health and the medical community and the struggles you've had and what you're doing to kind of change how people are shifting the perspective of how we can get better.
Well, one thing that I should have mentioned is that, which speaks to this, is that when Steve worked me up, he found another infection, Bartonella, that was also driving my symptoms. Mm-hmm. So my Lyme was definitely undertreated. There's no question. 3 weeks of antibiotics is definitely not enough for many, many, many people. The data is clear. So I should say that. But the fact that nobody looked for anything else is crazy to me. And when he treated both of those infections, all my symptoms went away, my psych stuff too. So I think that that point needs to be made. I think a lot of people suffer from anxiety and depression along with their, quote, autoimmune diseases. And people tell them, well, you're anxious because you have fibromyalgia or because you have RA. No, you're not anxious because you have those things necessarily. I mean, yes, they suck. It's depressing, but there's a brain component here. There's a neurologic component, just like we're seeing with COVID. And I think it's a lot easier for doctors now. Not all of them. Okay. So they're coming around to the fact that infections can cause a humongous multisystemic illness that lasts and lingers, and that is driven by a stealth chronic infection. So that, you know, there's so much for them to learn. If they'd been paying attention to Lyme for the last 30 years, we wouldn't be in this horrible mess with COVID, in my opinion, with long haulers, because I think it would be very obvious that there are chronic infections driving some percentage of these people's symptoms. So, you know, it's a bit crazy making to me to watch this all being, you know, predictably played out the way it is, where we're talking about immune suppressants already, and we're not talking about antivirals. You know, these things need to be put on the table. But in terms of my interactions with the medical community and my advice is just, you know, if I didn't advocate for myself and if I didn't trust my intuition, I knew they were all wrong. Yeah, it made me feel badly that I wasn't being taken as seriously as I felt I should have been. It made me feel badly to have the sense that people thought it was in my head, but I kind of didn't care that much because I knew they were wrong. And I think everybody has this inner voice that tells them, this is the wrong path. This doesn't make sense. But most people don't follow it. They need the confidence. So if I can be, you know, a guiding light in that regard and just tell people to keep going and go move on from doctors that aren't believing you and that won't look at data or won't listen to other stories that are similar to yours, stories like mine where people recovered. I say move on, but I also feel very strongly that you need to bring somebody to an appointment with you, because when you're really sick like this, you need somebody to advocate, ask questions, write down information, because you forget a lot of stuff when you're in this state. And I mean, I just say, as you just said, like, don't give up. There's a lot of ways to skin a cat. And this is my journey, but there are many, many other people I know that got better in various ways. Just look for the root, though. Demand the root cause answer. Demand it. If you don't find it, that's what you got to keep going for. That's my opinion.
Yeah. The challenge a lot of times, Dana and Stephen, you know, is that with traditional medicine, we're not really trained to look at root causes most of the time. Sometimes we do, but most of the time we don't really have a framework for thinking about chronic complex illnesses. We're good at acute illness. You had acute infection. Okay, we'll say it's this bacteria, we'll treat you, we'll figure out the cause, and that's fine. But for these latent infections or chronic infections or latent issues, whether it's mercury or mold or Lyme or whatever, people are often struggling for decades, and there really is a method of figuring this out, and really that's what we do at Cleveland and at Clinic and at the Center for Functional Medicine at my practice, Delta Wellness Center. It's what you do, Stephen, and a lot of doctors around the country are moving towards this kind of medicine, and people call it functional medicine, whatever you want to call it, but it's essentially, it's a new framework for thinking about disease based on treating the body as a system, about getting to the root cause, about understanding the interconnections between these things and thinking out of the box. I mean, just the idea that you could cure heart failure by treating infection, you know, that's a kind of an interesting idea. We know that viral infections affect the heart and cause heart failure, but we never really, and we even know from the literature that Lyme does too, but it's just sort of a blank spot that doctors don't pay much attention to. So really grateful for both of you for taking this on, writing this book, Chronic, The Hidden Cause of Autoimmune Pandemic and How to Get Healthy Again. There's a great chapter in there on COVID and how we need to think differently about COVID and autoimmune disease and chronic long hauler syndrome and some of the stuff we're really struggling with. What advice would you give people who are just struggling, both of you, in terms of how to advocate for themselves, how to get the support they need, how to find someone who can help them, and how to keep going?
Okay. I would say that, you know, I like functional medicine. So, you know, if you can't get answers from traditional medicine, then I would go towards a functional medicine route. I'd go to integrative doctors. I'd find Lyme doctors. I'd find somebody that's willing to listen and work with you that way.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a village. You know, you need diverse views because you never know what the next piece of information will provide you. You know, I failed so many therapies before I got well. And people always ask me, how come you didn't give up? Because I knew that what was it that was driving it was an infection. There was tons of evidence that it was. And I say that to people all the time. There's, you know, it's very easy. It's very disheartening to give, you know, it's like who gives up first? You or the chronic illness. And so it takes a village. I encourage mm-hmm. people to gather a team that can support them the way they need to be supported.
I mean, I think it is persistence. I mean, I remember, you know, being sick, and I don't know if this is your experience or what you see, but it's often not just one thing. People can have Lyme, but they might have many other issues that also need to be addressed. And if you just do one thing, you may not get it all. So, for example, you know, I developed mercury poisoning as my first insult, but then also got Lyme disease, which I didn't know probably for over a decade or more, which sort of prevented me from getting fully better. Then I lived in a house that had, you know, mold in it that I didn't know. And another house that had mold in it, and finally got really sick from the mold. So I had Bartonella, I had Lyme, I had mold, I had mercury. And often you see a lot of patients who have multiple factors that are driving their disease, not just one. And you can't just often just treat one. You have to deal with all of them. The other things do suppress immunity. For example, heavy metals will suppress your immune system, or more likely to cause autoimmune disease. And so can things like mold. So, and whether it's, or it could be your gut, or it could be food sensitivities, or a whole bunch of different things. So part of the trick is to understand how to address all these factors using the right kinds of support and tools, which I think you'll find through functional medicine. And people listening, you know, they can certainly go see you, Stephen, or see us at the Ultra Wellness Center or Cleveland. But also there's a lot of incredible doctors around the country. You can go to ifm.org and go find a practitioner. Now, not everybody's going to be equally trained or equally knowledgeable or equally as good as being a detective. Not everybody's Sherlock Holmes, right? but most can kind of help get you started and figure out what's going on and point you in the right direction. And I encourage people to not give up, because chronic illness sucks. And I can tell you from being there, I know, Stephen, you've been there, and certainly Dana, you've been there. Any last thoughts of words of wisdom for people listening about how to, you know, think about keeping healthy and getting their lives, you know, back on track if they've been sick?
Yeah, just have faith in your body's ability to heal. You know, it is, like you said, Mark, it's a multi-hit process. We can sustain a lot of stresses, you know, and it's like the straw that breaks the camel's back. How many, you know, at some point it just becomes too much. So, and that was something that I had to really convince myself, like the days of my near-death experience are behind me and I'm a fully functional person again. And there's a lot of like trauma from going through a life-changing illness. And again, there's a whole mm-hmm. section of the book about EMDR and other, you know, trauma therapies, because it's very hard to recover once you're physically better to even recover psychologically from that trauma. So I just want to tell people that you have to treat every part of them, you know, the body, the mind, and look at this, like you said, from a multi-hit kind of scenario, that it's not just to be, it's usually not just one infection, and it's usually many other environmental exposures besides infection.
Wow. Well, this has been such a great conversation. I know people who are listening hopefully can get a little bit of hope. And I encourage them to get your book. And it's a really a great addition to our understanding of autoimmune disease and chronic illness and even COVID. It's called Chronic, The Hidden Cause of Autoimmune Pandemic and How to Get Healthy Again. It's available now everywhere you get your books. And I hope you all love this podcast. If you know anybody with chronic disease or you've had it yourself, please share maybe how you've gotten better. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast. And we'll see you next time on The Doctor's Pharmacy.
Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Hyman. Thanks for tuning into The Doctor's Pharmacy. I hope you're loving this podcast. It's one of my favorite things to do, and introducing you all the experts that I know and I love and that I've learned so much from. And I want to tell you about something else I'm doing, which is called Mark's Picks. It's my weekly newsletter, and in it, I share my favorite stuff, from foods to supplements to gadgets to tools to enhance your health. It's all the cool stuff that I use and that my team uses to optimize and enhance our health. And I'd love you to sign up for the weekly newsletter. I'll only send it to you once a week on Fridays. Nothing else, I promise. And all you have to do is go to drhyman.com/picks to sign up. That's drhyman.com/picks, P-I-C-K-S, and sign up for the newsletter. And I'll share with you my favorite stuff that I use to enhance my health and get healthier and better and live younger longer.
Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Just a reminder that this podcast is for educational purposes only. This podcast is not a substitute for professional care by a doctor or other qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided on the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. If you're looking for help in your journey, seek out a qualified medical practitioner. If you're looking for a functional medicine practitioner, you can visit ifm.org and search their Find a Practitioner database. It's important that you have someone in your corner who's trained, who's a licensed healthcare practitioner, and can help you make changes, especially when it comes to your health.